You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. iiNet is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McCollum and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. This past week has seen some great leaps forward in something Australians have been missing out on for some time. Something the rest of the tech-savvy world is now starting to take for granted. Video on demand, or VOD as the three-letter acronym will have it. On a recent trip to the United States, it was quite evident that video on demand is taken for granted on cable services throughout the US. For a couple of bucks, viewers can watch the latest cinema releases piped over the internet delivered straight to the TV. If you're in for a pizza and movie night in California, as I was recently, you'll find the quality of image and sound much better than that of the food. The lack of video or DVD hire shops in the United States is a testament to the success of video on demand. The only place you'll find a DVD or Blu-ray media is in the retail outlets where they sell for sub $15 US. This is a taste of things to come in Australia, and if you ran a Video Easy or Blockbuster here, I'd be looking to diversify. While browsing through the aisles of Best Buy in Mountain View a few weeks back, I was drawn to the incredibly low price of Sony's PS3 game console. Well, compared to that of the same product in Australia anyway. The Sony PlayStation has been around for a while now and has really found a niche for itself in the marketplace, not only as a gaming console, but as a media centre for the living room, where basically everything from playing a video game to watching the latest Blu-ray release and now video on demand can be achieved with one device. VOD, which is now a reality here in Australia, completes the trifecta. Buying anything electrical from the US and bringing it back to Australia comes with risks. But the world really is becoming a global village. And to my relief, the $250 PlayStation 3 worked here in Australia just as it did in the country where it was originally destined. Come on now, how many of you have plugged 240 volts into the 120 volt socket, which I might add is clearly labelled 120 volts, only to breathe a sigh of relief that the PlayStation 3 really does have a universal power supply? Everything I've thrown at it has played flawlessly. Well, Blu-rays and games anyway. And now it seems that the US PS3 has taken the liking to Australian video on demand offerings through Sony and the ABC's iView. Even my kids have discovered iView since the arrival of the PS3 and are quite content to watch their programs delayed and played straight to the Bravia at the flick of a switch. As of last Thursday, Australian PlayStation 3 owners finally caught up with the rest of the world, with the PlayStation Network Video Store open for business, and downloadable full-length movies available to those with the PS3. This brings the PS3 in line with Microsoft's Xbox 360 console, which already has a streaming video service available. Unlike Microsoft, who only offer rentals, Sony will give the users options to either rent or buy movies. Movies can also be transferred to the PlayStation portable handheld device. Pricing so far is slightly cheaper than purchasing a new DVD or Blu-ray, with, say, a new run movie, $3 or $4 cheaper than the disc. High definition and standard definition versions are both available to purchase or rent, with rentals starting at around $4. Purchased movies are downloaded to the PlayStation hard drive, where they can be viewed or transferred to the PSP. They also come wrapped in digital rights management, limiting playback of purchased movies to the PS3 or the PSP. Adam Turner will have more on this in this week's View from the Couch. Movie data downloaded to the PS3 will be subject to your internet download limits, but the good news is, if your ISP supports free iView, like mine does, you won't mind the 1.2GB download the kids put in the monthly usage on Saturday alone. This is it, folks. Video on demand is here in Australia. If you've been holding off to see what's going to happen, now is the time to reevaluate the market. Keep away from the ISP contracts like those of Telstra and Optus, and keep your options open, as this will certainly start a push towards the US model, where all-you-can-eat broadband, that's limitless downloads, is the norm. The speed at which you consume is proportional to the price you pay.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Adam Turner takes a look at video on demand and Sony's PlayStation 3. Pakistan shuts down YouTube and Facebook. Google announces a new Chrome web store. Telstra takes Next G out to sea. And Google takes Apps Cloud to the enterprise. First up, though, here's the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, a study of the risk of brain cancer from mobile phone radiation is inconclusive. Nokia is now under intense pressure from Apple in the Australian smartphone market space. Google launches Google TV, and work begins on a new fibre optic link in Western Australia. Welcome to Tech Talk News. A large study undertaken to establish any link between brain cancer and mobile telephone use has been inconclusive. The study by the International Agency for Research on Cancer has found no definitive evidence of increased risk of brain cancer from mobile phones. However, researchers say that the possibility of a correlation between the formation of brain tumours and the highest levels of mobile phone usage, particularly amongst young people, warrants further investigation. The Interphone Study Group published the results in the International Journal of Epidemiology last week. This interview-based case control study was conducted in 13 countries, including Australia, using a common protocol. The Chief Executive Officer of the Cancer Council, Professor Ian Olver, spoke on government radio last week. Professor Olver said that overall, the results suggest the risk of using mobile phones is quite low, but that further research is still needed.
There are three groups that still need a lot of work to be done. One at the top end of phone use, the heavy phone users, those that reported using the phone always on the same side, had a very slight increase in gliomas on that side. So we need to do more work on that particular subgroup.
Researchers say that the majority of subjects were not heavy mobile phone users by today's standards, and that the median lifetime cumulative call time was around 100 hours, with a median of 2 to 2.5 hours of reported telephone use per month. 2010 is proving to be a fast-paced, competitive smartphone market, much to the benefit of tech-savvy Australians. The world's largest manufacturer of mobile telephones, Nokia Corporation, is now under intense pressure from Apple. Analysts say that while Nokia has long dominated the smartphone market in Australia, Apple's popularity has grown enormously in the last 3 years since the first iPhone was released. Apple's iPhone is now the second most popular smartphone in Australia, and its growth rate has far surpassed any other manufacturer. Telecommunications analyst Mr. Mark Novosel was reported in The Age Digital Life last week as being in the process of compiling smartphone sales figures for the first quarter of 2010. Mr. Novosel said that the iPhone is continuing to experience extremely strong demand in Australia, with 2009 shipments growing by more than 230% year on year. Mr. Novosel added that if the trend were to continue throughout 2010, Apple will likely overtake Nokia as being the number one converged device vendor by market share. Both Nokia and Apple are also under pressure from Android-powered smartphones such as the HTC Desire and the Sony Ericsson Xperia X10, which have recently entered the Australian market. Microsoft is also preparing to release Windows Phone 7 later this year, replacing the aging Windows Mobile operating system. And BlackBerry devices are still popular since manufacturer Research in Motion began targeting Australian mainstream consumers. Internet search juggernaut Google has launched a new video service which it says combines the speed and versatility of the World Wide Web with the comfort of your lounge room. The new product, launched in the US last week, Google TV, has been developed in partnership with Sony, Intel and Logitech, and is powered by Google's Android software and Chrome web browser. The service can be accessed in one of two ways, either using one of the soon-to-be-released Google-enabled televisions from Sony, or by way of a Google TV set-top box from Logitech. Google TV will search through live programs, DVR recordings, YouTube and other websites and return a compact list of results that can be streamed straight away. Google has also said that a software development kit and web APIs will be released soon after launch so that developers can build their own applications for Google TV and distribute them through the Android market. Sony and Logitech said the new Google-enabled televisions and set-top boxes would be available in time for Christmas this year and available internationally in 2011. And work has begun on a new fibre optic communications backbone linking Perth with Geraldton in Western Australia. The Minister for Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy, Senator Conroy, last week said that the link was part of the Rudd government's $250 million National Broadband Network Regional Backbone Blackspot program. Engineering of the 426-kilometre link will be undertaken by VisionStream and Engadia Alliance. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
See, there's some things you just got to do on a netbook, I think.
Netbooks aren't better at anything.
You told me to dress up. You said it was a formal occasion.
Last week's Four Corners was a humdinger. Rip snorter.
Android-powered, flash-enabled devices. I like the sound of that.
We've got another case here of a complete and utter lack of perspective.
Not that type of guy.
You sound disappointed, Graeme.
If people leave their Wi-Fi networks unprotected,
that's their own stupidity.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I agree.
And allegedly they're going to open a new Bondi store on the day of the launch of the iPad.
Does Flash's ability to charge for content make it an even greater threat to Apple and the iPad?
Much to my horror, shock, frustration, disdain and disgust.
No, the couch is unbleepable.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable, you're right.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. And what an intro that was. That was a long one tonight. PSP certainly making its mark here in Australia. Dr. Ron is joining the studio. Dr. Graeme is here. Apologies from JD this evening. He's got stuck in a meeting. I'd know where I'd rather be anyway. How are you, Dr. Ron?
I'm well, thanks, Andrew. How are you going this week?
Oh, yeah. It's been a big week this week.
We have no Ustream this week because Justin is stuck up in a meeting. You know, you like having a break from the Ustream occasionally.
There's a camera sitting right here in front of me, and I think it's just a... Anyway. Yes. You might laugh.
Look, we're all in the chat room, so come and talk to us now. chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Join. And bring your 3D glasses if you've got them, and we'll tell you why very shortly.
Yeah, come and join Brad and Andy B and Jono and Warlock and Ming and all sorts of people. Roberta's there, MJ's there. We're all there.
Yeah.
And if you're not listening live, go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
It'd be good to hear from some of our listeners up north, too. Where is it? Wewa. The Wewarians.
Wewarians
listening?
New South Wales, yep.
Yeah, give us a hoy. I think they take us live, so welcome aboard. Graeme, how was your week?
It's been an interesting week.
It's a lovely microphone you have there, Graeme.
Oh, you've just noticed that?
I have just noticed that. I've had my head out of the laptop and the notebooks. Yes.
Shame there's no Ustream tonight, but never mind.
No. Yeah, just save it for next week. We won't spoil the thunder.
I'll fix that. Stand by.
You're going to stand to take a photograph.
Where did that microphone come from, Graeme?
It's a standard studio microphone. It's just standard, got a bit of a...
It's had some advertising attached to it for the non-existent Ustream camera that we have tonight.
Yes. Yeah. Mm.
Anyway, is that in lieu of our visit up to the mall just to see if there's any iPad developers or shoppers or whatever come out for...
That was one thought in my mind, yeah.
That's very good. I'm impressed. Anyway, yes, the 3D glasses comment. I was just surfing around on the internet the other day and I had to go to maps.google.com, as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I just accidentally right-clicked on it and couldn't help but notice, see the map in 3D. I've gone, since when has Maps been 3D on Google?
So this isn't the map, this is the Street View.
This is Street View, the photo in Street View, and you can put it into 3D mode. So
when you say 3D, it's always been in 3D. You don't mean like putting glasses on, like red and blue glasses in the cinema, do you?
I think that's the way it is.
Is it what they're doing now?
I don't think it's the polarised ones.
No.
So you can't get your ones from the ones you've nicked from Avatar or anything like that. It's the old traditional blue and red ones. The ones you get out of the Herald Sun or the newspaper when they do those silly things on the television. But if you go down... I'm just so happen to be looking at the Best Buy shop in Mountain View at the moment on my Google Maps. And if you right-click on it, it says 3D mode on.
But Google hasn't advertised this.
No.
I've never heard anything about this officially from Goog.
No, just tripped over it on the weekend. So you thought, my goodness.
So if you secure yourself a pair of 3D glasses or red and blue goggles, you can now look at Street View. and have all the pedestrians jumping out at you. And
I guess so. So we'll leave that open to the to our creative people in the chat. They can go and find a pair of red and blue glasses or whatever you need for street view in 3D. I have to check that out. Check out the vehicles in the street. Maybe they're coming at you. Maybe Google didn't want to be left out of the new 3D television revolution, so they've embraced the wonders of the old days on maps and things like that.
But you made a comment about looking at something in the States before. What about Australia?
I haven't checked on Australia, but Dr. Graham has. I think you were just going to maps.google.com.
Yeah, I just had a check of it then, and yeah, looked up a local shopping centre and had it in 3D in Street View, yeah.
Did it have any Wi-Fi information about whose unsecured networks were there or anything like that?
No, they're not publishing that information.
Something else we can talk about tonight too. Apparently the Australian privacy people have taken a bit more of an interest in Google's antics in recent times. So.
Yeah, well, yet again, Google are copying the brunt of it, where they're only publishing information that's easily publicly accessible.
Yeah.
It's the real problem is that the information's accessible.
Mm.
So
what have they collected? We just don't know.
Well, yeah, but they've only collected what you've put out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know what they've collected in that we know what people are making publicly available. Mm. So things like the MAC address, MAC address of your hardware device.
Yep.
Possibly your network name.
Yep. Possibly.
Possibly any other information if you've had the network open and not encrypted.
Yeah, but if you're running a wireless network like that, then it's not Google's fault that you're leaking the information. If someone made the point last week that this MAC address, it's a globally unique address used for networking, so that your device can be identified on a network, so you can send information to it. It's necessary for the way networks work that be a unique number, but the first half of that number is assigned to equipment manufacturers. So you could have a MAC address that identifies that you've got a device made by Apple in your house, for example.
Just by looking at the first four
by looking
or
at the first
eight
part of the
characters.
The first half of the MAC address, yeah, which is assigned to a manufacturer. So the concern was that Google would now be able to say that if you want to go and find a house that's got this kind of a device in, you know, you can go and do a search by MAC address to find it.
Mm.
But of course, Google, A, aren't publishing the information. And B, if anyone really wanted to find houses that had, say, Apple equipment in or any other brand, all they'd have to do is do a drive around with their own wireless network scanner.
Why would you want to know that information? What possible use could it be to anyone?
Two things popped into mind.
Yep.
The first and most obvious one is if I want to steal one.
But every house, if not every other house now, has got a wireless router.
Well, the other one is for direct marketing.
Okay, so someone
drive
at that house
by advertising.
Yeah, they've got a Netgear device, and so Netgear might be very interested in that information.
In knowing that, yeah, that there's there's Netgear equipment in this house, or vice versa, you know, a rival company, you know, Linksys might be interested in finding the Cisco, the Linksys houses, and saying, look what our equipment can do that yours can't.
Mm.
So, but or it could be a lot more, you know, advanced than that. It could be a lot less tech centered than that.
I think you boys are reading too much into this.
Is what people are. My point is that this was the concern that was raised last week, and we mentioned on the show that you could identify what type of equipment was in the house. My point is that Google, you don't need Google to have that information available. If someone really wants to find out who's got, you know, such and such brand equipment in the house, then, you know, all they have to do is do their own drive around with a van and a Wi-Fi receiver.
Absolutely. It's been done before.
It's been done
Four
before.
Four Corners did it.
It's really trivial to set up and do. If you've you know, got half a day to spend on Google and you've got a laptop and a GPS receiver that you can buy for $30 on eBay, you know, you could do this yourself with very little extra work.
Pac-Man turned 30 during the course of the week. Did anybody happen to notice the Google front page?
The Google homepage.
It looked really cool, didn't it? It had little Pac-Man.
I'm surprised
is it still there?
Game board.
No, it's gone. I've just been looking for it while you're having your chat there. But it was really good. You could actually play the Pac-Man game, which turned 30, on the Google homepage, which I thought was really quite cute.
So not only did they have their special logo, But it was a playable version. It was a playable Google logo.
It was a playable Google logo.
Oh, was it playable as a game?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I didn't realise that. Oh, they've gone to a lot of trouble to make that.
What does it mean? How many people?
I hope it's archived somewhere.
How many people chose not to sign in with their iGoogle account and brazenly have a look at the very front page of Google and see if you could see the Pac-Man logo? But it was playable. It just was a bit longer. It was an elongated version because, you know, normally the interior where your little Pac-Man run around just formed the words Google, and it was the dots.
It was
and
a little bit
Pac-Mans.
Smaller than a normal Pac-Man board.
So well done, Google. That was very humorous, and I thought very funny. And, yeah, I think a lot of people were tweeting about it and looking at it during the course of the day. But I was one of those ones. I just logged in the morning and thought, oh, how cute. Why have we got Pac-Man? And then realized, oh, it's their 30th anniversary. Where were you 30 years ago when Pac-Man hit the arcade games? Well, maybe we shouldn't answer that. It'd be incriminating, wouldn't it?
I wasn't in a games arcade.
No?
30
no,
years
weren't.
Ago.
Well, that was a long time ago, wasn't it? Yeah. Anyway, other interesting news. I managed to crack my iPhone again. Did I tell you the dilemmas I had recently?
Yeah, you had to jailbreak it again.
I had to do a Control-Alt-Delete on it and reboot it, reformat it and start again.
Why did you have to do that?
I don't know.
No, but why did you take it upon yourself to do that?
Because it wouldn't boot.
It wouldn't turn on.
It would turn onto the Apple logo, then turn off. I had to insert the white cable, and with a bit of help from some blue-shirted people, managed to reload it. But I went from 3.1.2 to 3.1.3, which was devastating because all my jailbroken apps weren't usable under that sort of condition. But the experience was quite good. At the end of the day, when you come out and look at everything in hindsight, it wasn't too hard. All of the apps just backed themselves up from the iTunes store. They just all came back with a few extra bits and pieces that I wasn't bargaining for, like new versions. And when I managed to use the application to jailbreak 3.1.3, which was Spirit, it worked really well. It just happened in a few seconds, and I logged back onto the store where I got my other apps from, and it said, would you like these again? I said, yes, please. And within a few moments, it was pretty much back the way it was before I even started there. And I haven't jailbroken the iPad, for those of you who are asking. I think Zach was asking as he walked out from the previous show.
Is 3.1.3 the operating system version?
It is.
Okay.
It is.
So you're up to date now? Is that the latest operating system you can get?
Yeah. Version 4. Next month, we've got the Worldwide Developers Conference. I just had to think about that for a minute. WWDC. Mac Convention in San Francisco, which everyone gets all their goss for, you know, all the new stuff that's Mac-related. And there's been some emails around the traps at the moment, even some from Steve Jobs saying that we won't be disappointed. So it's a pity JD isn't here this evening because he might be here later. But yes, I wonder what surprises there are in store. I think guessing there's a new iPhone about to arrive and the imminent arrival of potentially OS 4 or 4.0 for the iPhone as well. And who knows, probably a new iPad because that's what they tend to do with these sort of things. So, yes, the Worldwide Developers Conference coming up very shortly. All sorts of interesting things will no doubt come across our way. Anyway, before we get to the rundown, would Coro, there's people...
Always correspondents.
People have been rising to the occasion. Oh, by the way, I've changed all the mail servers over. And so if you've been... Anyone's had problems trying to get in touch with us, try again because over the weekend we had a few issues, but... Hopefully you haven't noticed.
I hadn't noticed. What happened?
Excellent. There you go. Need to know basis. No need to fair.
No need to know.
I had to dig through about 4 years of emails from you to find out what my password was.
Well, there you go. See, Graham noticed, but I did send Graham an email, but you shouldn't have noticed.
No, I didn't notice anything.
No. Correct.
How good. Come he didn't have to change anything and I had to change settings?
Because you pop
That's
in
not
and
very
he, falls,
fair.
He gets a forward to his
Oh,
other stuff.
I see.
I'm just lucky, am
so
I?
See, told you, need to know basis. On you go.
From Mark Diggins, our US correspondent.
Hello, Mark.
Hello, Mark. Read data packs and data charges on 3G. Over here, Sue and I pay $30 a month each for unlimited data.
Yeah, but what speed?
On T-Mobile.
Yeah, but what speed?
Doesn't say.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And I have an app to tether my phone to the laptop. I think AT&T have a similar or slightly higher price for their unlimited data packs.
I'm using one right now, which is jailbroken. It works a treat on my iPad. I mean, my iPhone.
Does it?
It's called what's it called? Hang on, I'll bring it up. If you're using, if you've ever wanted to tether any device to an iPhone, it's called My Wi. Works very well.
My Wi, is that the name of the app?
My Wi is the name of the app. My Wi, it's Wi-Fi tethering. But I didn't mean to tell you that. Off you go.
Damien, via email, says, hearing that Graham is still struggling with the order of his podcasts on his iPod. If he plays the podcasts by going to the albums folder on the iPod, and not the podcast folder, they will appear in the chronological order and play sequentially. That's how I get around the problem. For the record, I manually manage my podcasts. The iPod is still natively paired to my workstation, but I do more work on my notebook these days. I haven't bothered to trash the iPod's contents just to repair the damn thing to the notebook. There you go, Graham.
Okay, albums.
Manage your podcasts from your albums folder.
Question from a listener too, Graham. Why have you got a mandarin on your microphone?
Well, that's a studio standard.
Yes, it's an orange windsock for those who are wondering what was in the photograph that got tweeted.
It's the what's called a mic flag underneath.
Ah, there you go.
Nothing if not interactive. That's got
the, absolutely.
You know, that little box that's that you see on microphones on in the news with the station's logo on.
Yeah, they're the ones.
Yeah, I've got a Tech Talk Radio one on my microphone tonight, which is
a great expense to the management.
It was great expense. chat.techtalkradio.com.au if you'd like to come along and ask us any questions or any questions of that in the other people in our chat room.
From Marky Mark on the forum, Marky Mark says...
Is he there tonight?
I haven't seen Marky Mark tonight. He might come up in the chat room.
It's gone off again in the forum. Sorry.
Optus cans the $39 7 gigabyte wireless broadband package without notice. Marky Mark says he signed up with Optus wireless broadband around about 2007-2008. At the time, he bundled it with his Optus mobile phone to give him 7 gigabytes of data usage, uploads and downloads counted, for just $39. In the last week or
so, they're on to you, Marky Mark.
He received a text message to say he'd reached his 80% of his usage, which was fair enough. He was soon approaching his 7 gig limit. But then a few days later, he received another message saying he'd... say I've reached 80% of usage. I think he means 100% of usage. Curious, I logged in to check my usage. Lo and behold, my plan had magically changed from 7 gig to 5 gig. As usual, the first thing I did was run to Whirlpool, not Optus, to check what was going on. I noticed a few others were experiencing the same thing. Optus had basically overnight decided to can the 7 gigabyte plan and reduce the data limit to 5 gigabyte. Ah, crap, he says.
It was good while
it lasted.
That's like everything. If telcos realise it's too good to be true, then they kill it. But well done, Telstra, for actually dropping their data rates on their iPad packages, which will probably come out next week.
James via email says, "Hi guys, sorry I don't get into the chat room anymore. I had a new baby recently." Nice to know. Take it to your wife that's had the baby, James, but that's good. You helped. As you have been talking a lot about Flash, I wanted to point out a long blog post which I wrote deconstructing the Steve Jobs letter, the famous Steve Jobs letter.
The 1,500-word epic.
Yes, it should be very interesting to you as it will probably update you on a lot of misconceptions Steve likes to put forward about Flash, why he's trying to strong-arm Adobe Flash. I also recommend reading some of the comments. They are very good with some great points. His blog is at crafted.com.au if you want to have a look at James's blog. Thanks for the email, James.
It's well worth having a listen to last week's View from the Couch, too, if you're interested in the Flash shenanigans.
James also says he would like to say that Flash, he believes, like GIF, will never really die. Removing Flash from a web browser would be like removing GIF.
They said that about Real Audio, too.
I thought GIFs were dead.
Well, I don't know.
A footnote in the
GIFs,
history of the
GIFs, by the way, is the correct pronunciation.
GIFs, is it?
Yeah. GIF.
Graphic.
GIF?
Yeah. Graphic information.
No, it's not J, it's a G.
GIF. It's a soft G.
I don't call you JM, do I?
No, because my name is pronounced with a hard G. GIFs are pronounced with a soft G.
I didn't know there was a hard G and a soft G, but see, you learn things on this show.
Peter on the forum says, interesting discussion this week, re VoIP quality and QoS, quality of service.
Yeah, we spoke about that last week, didn't we?
You touched on the solution, but I think for the mums and dads who are your target audience, I believe you should go back and revisit this. As a seller,
there's interest in this market, isn't there?
Yeah.
As a seller of Engine, my Netphone and Exitel, I've had various VoIP devices sold to customers with internet speeds down as far as 512, 128, even working on 3G and HSDPA.
Yep.
It's the low end, isn't it, of broadband?
Yes.
I strongly recommend the following, says Peter. One, ensure all internet traffic goes through the VoIP device, using a combined VoIP modem wherever possible, not a separate VoIP box or adapter hanging off a router.
Yeah.
Point two, a minimum of 1.5 meg down, 256k up.
Say that again, 1.5 down.
And 256 up.
Oh, that's your...
As a minimum.
That's the old T1 standard.
Yeah. That's the highest level ADSL 1 you can usually get if it's not capped.
Yes, that is. Mm. Correct. Glad you clarified that. Because ADSL 1 will go up to about 7.5 if you... ask for the all-you-can-eat ADSL 1.
Whilst lower speeds will work, says Peter, it can be flaky as the VoIP service needs approximately 80 to 100k in each direction. 512/128 only leaves 28k up speed whilst on the phone. And point three, Australian-based VoIP provider with an Australian server is what he's recommending. The ultra-cheap providers are ultra-cheap for a reason, and you will suffer lag and echo.
We should get Peter in on the show one night from a telephone near him.
I think he's in Sydney.
That's all right.
Yes.
That's all right. He's in Australia. He could be anywhere in the world. That's the joys of telecommunications. We'll get him in on a VoIP line and see if it holds up.
We've also got some feedback, last but certainly not least, from Richard on the forum, who says, your most recent podcast was so annoying in its pronunciation of...
Oh, Adobe.
Thank you, Adobe.
I saw that.
I stopped. Now, I've got to say, Richard's not the Lone Ranger either, just quietly. No. We had more than just your message, Richard. I stopped listening after 5 minutes. I have never felt so irritated. I felt like throttling the speaker there and then. I'm not sure if the
don't
speaker...
Mean that, don't mean a reputable journalist who writes for...
Turner, excuse
yeah,
me.
Yeah, sorry.
...was doing this deliberately or if he was completely misinformed. I assume the former, as I doubt you would have tech-savvy speakers on your show who can't pronounce... a world-famous company name like Adobe. Adobe. For the record, his pronunciation, Adobe, is completely incorrect. The proper pronunciation, and Richard's referred us to some links here at inogolo.com, Inogolo. Is that how you say that? I'm pronouncing things that on pronunciation which are unpronounceable. Adobe, there's an audio link that he's got there, so you can hear how Adobe should be said, and also a Wikipedia link. Other than that, I enjoyed your podcast, Richard.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed the rest of it.
Sorry, you'll just have to shuttle through that. That's why you listen on the pod, really. You can hit the fast-forward button for a moment.
I think I made a comment about Adam's pronunciation later in that same show.
We did. So. Richard, Adam's been strung up. He's been chastised and summarily executed.
And so, he sent another couch in tonight, which is extra long.
Does he say Adobe there?
No, he doesn't. He says he's working his way through the words of Sony this week, so...
Sony.
Sony. How do you say it?
Sony.
Oh, no. Here we go.
Sunny. Thank you for your feedback. Thank you, everybody, for your feedback. And
that's the show for the evening.
That's pretty much the show for the evening. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is the email address, or you can post messages on the forum under the show notes, which are published from week to week.
All right. And did you say that we're online? Chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Come along now and say g'day. I should go back there. I was just having a bit of a snoop around online and seeing what else there was.
The chatters are arguing about the pronunciation of the word pronunciation. So
yeah, well, that's what they do on the chat. They have their own show there.
They sometimes go off on their own little tangents there, but that's good.
Pronunciation.
Yes, yeah. and I
Pronunciation. Pronunciation. Oh, dear. No. Trent and Artie are getting into it there. It's going to be ugly.
And
Adam's noticeable by his abscess.
Someone suggested Sony, and I think that's probably... I just seem to remember one of their advertising campaigns where they... It's a Sony!
Yes, so, that's right.
Sorry, my left ear's a bit deaf now. What'd you say? We
have to be governed by what they say in their advertising, don't we?
Yes. Although sometimes even they get it wrong.
Mm.
It's funny, isn't it, foreign companies? You just don't quite know how to pronounce it. But anyway, I think we should leave that one alone now. Yes. Adam can write something about it in one of his blogs, if need be. Now, Google TV, this sounded quite interesting in respect to this week's topic of discussion, which I guess is very much video on demand is here in Australia, and we're now starting to see a lot of content being delivered to us over the pipes of the internet. Lots to talk about internet-wise tonight too, but you touched on Google TV in the news. What do you reckon about this, Dr. Ron? A smart TV service allows people to search both live channels as well as content from websites such as YouTube. Is this just more of the same?
No, I think Google's got their finger on the pulse. I'm surprised, though, that it's taken Google this long to come out with this sort of a service. If you look at the things, like those little Western Digital boxes that we've got that connect directly to the internet, and let you connect directly to YouTube content.
I've got a conundrum with that, which I'll talk about in a minute, but yes.
Well, this is Google's answer to that, but it's that and more. They've actually partnered up with equipment manufacturers, and I'm frantically looking for my notes here. There is going to be a set-top box, which is going to be manufactured by somebody, and they've got televisions as well. Oh, Logitech is going to manufacture the set-top boxes, and Sony are going to manufacture televisions with this inbuilt functionality. So you can have Google Television already built into your TV. You won't need a set-top box, and it will connect to the Google TV service. You'll be able to type in a program name. Say, I want to catch up on 2 and a Half Men. It'll look at your PVR recordings to see if you've got anything saved It'll look online to see if there's anything available to you online streaming, and look at YouTube. It'll look at a whole raft of services, and it'll find all the content that you're looking for, and it'll present it to you, and you can select what you want to watch.
We've probably got a lot to thank for Stephen Conroy, the Minister for Communications, in respect to the broadband filter for this, because people are going to start to become fully aware of what proxy servers are and how to get around IP filtering and things like that, which also has the added advantage of being able to connect into overseas broadcasting services, and they think that you're in their country, so they'll serve it to you. If that makes good sense. So very shortly,
until they start realizing that that's what people are doing and start blocking the VPN services. Yes.
Block the proxies.
Yes. And
well,
the proxies, yes.
Yes, but they're going to pop up and do all sorts of things anyway, I would imagine. So, but anyway, Google TV coming to a set-top box and a Sony television set near you. And that's going to be, I think that they're touting that for the first TV sets produced by Sony should be available early next year.
They said in their blog, googleblog.blogspot.com, which is like the official Google blog, they've said there that the Google-enabled televisions and the set-top boxes will be available in time for Christmas this year. So hopefully in stores by December. That's international, in the United States.
What's
the
tip you'll be able to get on the PlayStation 3? Because that's what I want to talk about in a minute. That does everything, that thing.
Now, you've had a bit of a play with the PlayStation this week.
Also,
internationally, Google TV products will be available in 2011. So early next year, we're hoping.
Yeah. All right, so that's going to be interesting. I'll watch this space. This is where it's all going, guys. Video on demand and serving stuff up. If I was a broadcaster or a video library owner, I'd be incredibly worried at the moment. This week, which I'm not going to steal too much of Adam's thunder, but for those of you who are PlayStation 3 owners, and I'm very much a newbie in the ranks of PS3s whilst traversing through Mountain View in my recent trip to the United States, I couldn't resist the low price that it was available for over there, so I snaffled one up and
what
brought it
home. What was the low price, if it's not a rude question?
It's in the 200s.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Over here, it's in the high 400s.
Yeah.
So, yes, it was a very good buy at that point in time. Impulse shopping for a gadget guy like me walking past said, oh, I better take one of those home. I did declare it as I came through customs. They couldn't give a hoot about it. But
they were more interested in the iPad.
More interested in the iPad. Yeah, what's an iPad?
You were in a very suggestible state while you were travelling, weren't you?
Oh,
you,
absolutely.
You bought more than one device that you said you weren't going to.
Has it taken you this long to unpack the PS3 and plug it in and have a play with it?
I finally got it. It was the dangling of the carrot of the video on demand and all the new Sony stuff that actually made me plug it into the wall. As I alluded to in the opening of the show this evening, it clearly states on the actual PS3, it's a slimline one, it clearly states that it's a 120-volt device. So as you go to plug the 240 volts in there, you sort of put your fingers in your ear a little bit and turn the power point on. But no, Sony does truly have a universal power supply. So that was the first problem solved. The second problem, the second thing I did, obviously plugging it into the television set, into the HDMI, worked an absolute treat. The next thing I did, I put a Blu-ray disc in. I put Avatar in. Now, Avatar was, it played straight up. I thought, oh, here we go. It's a B version, as in Region B. I thought, I wonder if a Region B Blu-ray is going to play in a Region A Sony PlayStation, to which the answer is yes. So I was very happy about that.
Yep.
And it played beautifully. But I got American censorship and American information come up on my screen, which I don't get if I play the same disc in the Australian version.
Does the machine itself know where it is? You've plugged it into...
Oh, I think it's very much intelligent about where it is, because I also managed to connect in and create an account with this new Sony Video On Demand service, which was launched last week.
Through your PlayStation 3?
Through the PlayStation 3.
Okay.
The other fantastic thing is iView, which is the ABC's Video On Demand service, also just magically appeared once I told the PlayStation 3 that I was in Australia. It says, oh, you might want this as well. And so it just appears as a little icon there. So you click the iView button on the PS3 and you get full screen, high def, Bravia quality menus and navigation, which looks exactly the same as it does on if you go on your computer and browse to iView. And the kids discovered it, and they've been watching all of the back catalogue of all their favourite cartoons and kids shows and stuff like that, so much so that they managed to go through about a bit over a gig of bandwidth on the weekend just in one day. So
that's good.
Guys, if you've got one of these PS3s and the kids discover it and you don't have unmetered iView, be careful. You'll go through bandwidth like it's going out of fashion. But also, well, that same warning applies to the video on demand stuff. You pull a movie down off one of these, off the new Sony site, you'll go through a few... you know, gig quite easily because they're fairly chunky little size files that you're going to be pulling down. But to my surprise, everything was as expected. log in, nice easy navigation to find your way. You go, you find the movie that you want, you get four options. You get the high definition and the standard definition download to buy, which is probably a few bucks cheaper than what you buy the disc for in the shop. And you get the high definition and the standard definition rental, which is $3 to $6, depending upon what the movie was. Haven't downloaded one yet, but I'll give it a whirl, Shirl, over the course of the weekend and get back to you on how well it works. But suitably impressed. Everything I threw at this US-based PlayStation when I brought it back to Australia has worked fine. The only thing that has happened is if you put a old generation standard DVD in the thing, it says I can't play PAL. But if that's my only problem, I don't have a problem. So that was my findings of PlayStation Land on the course of the weekend. So if you're looking for a multimedia device, it's going to come highly recommended. This thing does absolutely everything for a reasonable price.
Except play all the DVDs that you own.
Well, it will if you buy one here in Australia. It's just me. I bought one in America.
All right.
But they're a great unit. And my conundrum is now I don't know what to use. Do I use my Western Digital device? Or do I use my Sony device? Because the Sony device doesn't like the MKV files, which the Western Digital device plays flawlessly with all the chapter points, et cetera, et cetera. So,
but yeah,
it's not a bad problem
Sony,
to have.
Your Sony will play Blu-ray discs.
Yes. Also, yeah,
they both have HDMI as the output.
Yeah, high definition multimedia interface.
To the television. Yeah.
Full HD into your back of your Bravia. Yeah, that's good. They're very terrific little devices.
Move the Western Digital device into the spare room or something. Under another TV somewhere.
Oh, yeah, that's a possibility. But now the kids have discovered video games. Now I'm in trouble. Oh.
Have you bought any video games?
Yeah,
have you tried any games
I've
yet?
I've got one.
What have you got?
I'm not turning into a gamer.
What do you got?
Band Hero thingy.
We need to get you some shoot 'em up first-person shooter games.
No, not for the
kids. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
No.
They'd love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Teach them how to.
That's what you're worried about, isn't it?
I want to get them things like Need for Speed so they can learn how to drive on Victorian roads. That's what I reckon they need. Yeah. Get out there. Yeah. Anyway, that's for another story. But yes, we're going to start obviously moving down into the realms of video games and things like that. So
the thing that's stopping me from getting a PS3, to get one, is the PS2. That's exactly it.
That's the thing. And you can't use any PS2 stuff on a PS3.
And I've got such an investment in the PS2 games. I think I'm the only person in the world that has a legally unchipped PS2 with legitimate games that we've purchased, and we've spent so much money on this library.
Why don't you go diagonally and get a Wii?
Well, yeah, but the PS3's got so much going for it. Price, the output format, the fact that it's a Blu-ray player.
You just said you weren't going to go down there. So
no, but I'm torn. I want to go down there. But what's stopping me is the fact that we've got this big investment in the PS2 technology.
So
and
why can't
stupid Sony won't make the games backward compatible.
But you've got a PS2 console, so all you have to do is leave it hooked up as well.
Can I suggest the reason why they're not backwardly compatible is because of the HD requirements. PS3s are an HD device. Now, I don't believe PS2s are a high-def. Do they have an HDMI port?
No, it's component out.
And this is where I think a lot of the games are all being made for the proper HD 1920 by 1080 resolution.
But it's not like we don't watch a lot of standard def content on our high-def screens.
It'd still be able to support the old games, surely.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm just surmising. There's someone out there probably will know the answer to this and tell us why, but
I think you might have had the answer.
I reckon there'll be a technical reason for it.
I reckon in the reasons that you gave, you said that the cost was extremely good. I reckon that in cutting down the cost, they've removed the extra chips they had to put in to support the old console, emulate the old console.
They want to migrate people to the new one anyway, and this is the way to do it.
And, yeah, they take those chips out, they save a few bucks, they make the console a bit cheaper and more attractive. Yeah.
There's some good specials to be had out there too. Shop around, guys, if you're in this sort of market. But I think rather than looking at a games console, look at it as a multimedia hub for your living room. If you have the widescreen telly and all that, this is just a portal which enables you to connect via the internet to anything and everything, which is just absolutely fantastic, and video on demand. You won't have to go to the video library again.
Trent likes your idea of having Need for Speed as a driver education
application. Oh, that's good, Trent.
Application.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no,
that's good. And,
what's the world coming to? I think this is the dilemma. Speaking of coming to things, after the break, we're about to go to a break. Adam Turner will be joining us for the your audio you did the other day with Lydia Davis.
Yes.
Dr. Ron says he pointing.
Yes.
Well, let me tell you, yours is now no longer the worst audio I've heard on the show.
How could you have got worse than that Skype call?
Yes. Stand by for all of that and more. But anyway, we're going to a break. We'll be back with more Tech Talk Radio after this.
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio. Yes, I had a very bad experience with this phone.
From a control freak of a company that made the device.
Does that surprise anybody in this room?
Oh, okay. This is a different world.
Oh, yeah. There's got to be one in every country. Is he trying to censor the internet too?
Maybe this should be in slash rant.
You'd have to have a screen that reflected the image, preserving the polarisation.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
What do you mean? I don't know. I've got lots of buttons over here. I can click.
Careful, or a quick one to shut us up.
You might.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
One of the great things about the new Wi-Fi app that I've got on my iPhone to share my broadband with, it tells you actually on the lock screen how much bandwidth you've had going up and down. You'll be pleased to know that just sitting here in the studio, oh, it's gone off, I've churned through 70.52 meg down and 13 meg up on my little notebook. That's not bad, huh?
75 meg down.
Oh, something like that. 70.5. Right. 70.5. There you
doing
go.
Doing what? That's Windows updates?
That's a lot, yeah.
I know. I've been doing an update, obviously.
Service packs.
So you've got to be careful out there, guys.
So that's, your iPhone's functioning as a wireless hotspot.
It is.
That's fantastic. And what's connected to that?
This netbook over here, because I can't connect into the router in the other room, in the radio station's router at the moment. Damn. For some strange technical reason.
Technology.
I don't know why. It is. Great when it works.
So
as John said tonight.
Netbook's connecting via Wi-Fi to your iPhone.
Yes.
And your iPhone is connected to the
mobile
world
broadband
over
network,
the mobile
yes.
broadband network.
Correct.
Isn't that great?
How does it go for battery life when you do that?
I'll get back to you on that, but it's fairly to hold in the hand at the moment. It's fairly warm, and it's down to 34%, and that's after a whole day's usage. I haven't charged it.
So, oh, okay.
So it might last the length of the show or not. I don't know, but there you go. So you just got to think.
But you haven't been using it all day as a hotspot.
No,
you've only turned on the hotspot tonight.
No,
only
clients and friends have been harassing me today on it, so I've only just turned it on whilst I've been in the studio tonight. So, yeah. Anyway, there you go. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron is in. Dr. Graham is in. JD might be in later on. He's been held up in a meeting, apparently, something like that. So,
Such excuse.
Absolutely.
I think he could have done better than that.
I want to hear about the WWDF for next month. I was thinking of
WWF
the
WWF is something
that's
else,
the,
yes.
They've got pandas on the front or something, haven't they?
Well, either that or wrestling.
Moving right along. Did you know?
You're thinking of the World Wildlife
something like that
thing.
Yeah, sorry, I just had a vision of pandas there.
Pandas wrestling.
Telstra is going to take NextG out to sea, did you know?
What's the point of all this?
It'd be nice if it... Yeah, go on, anyway.
Yeah, well, apparently the Telstra have released new maps showing...
Telstra, NextG, all at sea.
Where your NextG goes when you're out at sea. So if you're actually a yachty, boaty, or anything maritime-ish like, be sure to go and download the latest map from the Telstra website, which shows you... looks like the ink's run just offside the coast of Australia. If you look at the big map, there you go. Exhibit A, holding it up to the webcam, which is not here. Where'd the webcam go? Has anyone seen it? Oh.
I'll tweet pick it for you. Hang on.
Nobody's seen it because we haven't got any webcams.
Webcams are gone. All right. Other interesting news this week, Pirate Bay. Remember them?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, well, Sweden's Pirate Party is now providing bandwidth for file-sharing website, the Pirate Bay, after its previous internet service provider, Cyber Bunker, pulled the plug due to court injunctions obtained by the US movie studios. Because if you're not familiar with what's happened here, Pirate Bay housed or was a search engine which gave anyone and everybody access to torrents, which you could then download movies with.
Yes.
And the US movie people got a bit funny about it, and a legal process ensued, and after that, they sort of got taken down.
Yeah, Pirate Bay actually ran the BitTorrent trackers, which make the whole BitTorrent network work, but don't directly host the content. So,
no, that's on everyone's PCs around the world.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're facilitating. But anyway, the Pirate Party's leader, Rick Falk-Vinge, said that providing bandwidth to a search engine and homepage is completely legal, describing contact with the Pirate Bay as routine. So there you go. They're back up online. One other interesting thing, too, there's a lot of the torrent sites in my travels are not accessible from certain countries. Like, for example, there's one called ISO Hunt, which I think is a fairly popular one.
Yeah.
I tried accessing that from the United States just while I was over there, and it comes back and said, nah, sorry, can't access it from here.
Mm.
But yet, as you traverse the world, it's amazing what you can see from certain countries, and you just take it for granted. So... Yeah,
I have seen some interesting correspondence, and I'm not even sure whether it's a whole country. It could well just be that the particular provider you were using in the US has got them blocked for some reason. And I've seen that AT&T occasionally block things.
They came up with an American flag on it, and it said, "No, you can't go there."
Mm,
but it might have been a carrier-related
thing. I don't think there's like a a great firewall of America, like there's going to be a great firewall of Australia. No, they've got little, already a great firewall of China.
Itty bitty things.
I think they're made by the rules are set by the individual ISPs, not by the country as a whole.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, what might have been blocked by AT&T might not have been blocked by say Sprint or whatever other carriers you've got over there. So,
Mobile broadband providers might have an interest in preventing you from easily downloading large quantities of
they've also got a history of being a little bit reactionary and doing things without quite thinking them through, and they'll get a user complaint about a site and they'll block it for a while, and then they'll get a few complaints about the block, and then they'll remove the block, and you know it's a little bit hit and miss sometimes, and you see you see threads about on forums about them blocking ISO Hunt for a while, or blocking 4chan for a while, or things like that. So
Facebook is evil. I'm sorry,
but Facebook is not. It's not network intensive in the same way that peer-to-peer file sharing would be. I can understand them letting that through, but a site like ISO Hunt or one of those search engines for torrents, having that block, trying to discourage users from working in that sort of way.
Yeah, but the sort of users that go there are the sorts of users that will find their way around
will. Yeah, it's a bit of a token gesture, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's wrong with Facebook, Andrew?
Oh, look,
International Quit Facebook Day, May the 31st, I think. Yeah, get on board.
That sums it up, really.
Why do you want to quit Facebook?
Oh, look, it's just an evil site because people, they're lured into putting their stuff up there and then all their information is on pass to other providers.
Yeah, but that's what it's all about. That's why you sign up and put your information there so it's available to everyone.
That's correct. You've got to sign up with the 50-point question to actually make sure that you get one question wrong and that 50-question, multiple-choice answer thing that you got to do. You get one, you've got to get 100%, otherwise your details will be shared. But anyway, as Graham was saying, up to 60% of people, and this is in a recent poll, want to leave Facebook over privacy issues. Facebook's recent privacy issues could be driving more than half of its users to quit the social networking site. Yeah. Security firm Sophos said that it conducted an informal user poll which found that 60% of Facebook users were considering leaving the networking site to some extent. And of the nearly 1,600 users Sophos polled, 30% said that it was highly likely they would be leaving over the privacy concerns. So, and when you think about it, Facebook is a company to make money. So what do? You sell bits and pieces. You sell your data. You sell what you own. What people give you.
Facebook is essentially viral in nature. When you sign up, it emails all your friends and wants them to sign up as well. So this is spreading by a social engineering viral method.
Uh-huh.
And all the applications that run on Facebook are essentially viral as well.
Yeah, so you sign up in the knowledge of that. What's the problem?
And you get an application
thing
on your page and it tries to set up that same application on all your friends' pages until it spreads throughout the entire Facebook network.
Yeah, but you've got a level of cynicism in your voice that suggests this might be a bad thing, Graham. You're going into it and you're signing up to an account fully in the knowledge and aware of this, that's the situation. What's the problem?
There are three people in this room, of which only one has a Facebook account. Can you tell which one?
I don't understand why. I don't understand why people get on Facebook and they sign up and they put all their information there, their date of birth and where they live and their photos of themselves throwing up in the back of a taxi and all that sort of stuff. And they say, oh, I can't believe this stuff's being used against me. It's terrible. It's actually out there on the internet now. Well, hello. You put it on the internet. You signed up to a social networking site.
It's funny. Facebook is a very good source for all those people, all those journalists. You know,
end up on the news, then yes, the journos will end up on your Facebook page. This is
your
true.
Your Facebook page is where those pictures come that end up on the front page of the morning newspaper. Mm. So just make sure that you've got clean undies on and you'll be right.
Yes.
I think if you're aware of how Facebook works and you're aware of the very basic fact, the premise of the internet is that once something is on the internet, it is there and it's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to remove. If you're aware of that and you use it to your advantage, then I don't think there's a problem with it.
I think at the next election we should all vote Liberal Nats because the new government's got a great plan to get rid of the internet. They're just going to stop it. I don't know, in news this week, the opposition came up with a great plan that said the NBN Senate Committee had handed down its interim report, which ultimately recommends the government scrap the National Broadband Network. Now, it was less than a unanimous call from the senators involved, but really, we've already invested all this time and effort, and you know, even Stephen Conroy put $17 million into a survey to find out, or was that the, no, that was the internet filter. Forget that bit. That was the internet filter, mixing policies there, which is very easy to do with that, man.
You're getting your moods waddled.
I am. Yeah. But even the majority from the Liberal and National parties combined effectively conceded there wasn't much chance of the government dumping the project. So on one hand, they're saying dump it. On the other hand, they're saying let's not dump it.
So this leaves us with a big problem with the forthcoming election because...
It gets rid of Facebook that way.
We need to vote for the Labor Party rather than the Liberals in order to keep the National Broadband Network on track, which is absolutely essential infrastructure for Australia's future. If we don't have a National Broadband Network, then the future is not looking nearly so bright for Australia as it would be with one. On the other hand, we have to vote against the Labor Party and for the Liberal Party to try and get rid of the Great Firewall of Australia.
It's a conundrum.
So, yeah, I think, yes, we'll just have to find a third
But this current government that we have in...
What we're going to have to do.
Well, we're not a... Yes, called the Greens. We're not a political show by any way, shape or form. But, yeah, if you're voting from the technological heart, then you certainly have a few issues which you need to decide.
And
over.
These are the two big, two huge tech issues that are going to be part of the upcoming election, and the result of this election is going to have an effect on the tech world in Australia for years to come because of these two issues.
This current,
and if we get it wrong, we're going to be really in a bad state.
This current government is certainly promoting a lot of uncertainty in a lot of areas, of which obviously, is affecting how. I guess foreigners are looking in at Australia from an investment point of view,
yes,
and also from a safe haven point of view for all sorts of reasons. So, I think we need to sort of work out what we're doing. I think the NBN is probably a good thing for Australia, in one shape or another. But you look at what we've currently got. There was another poll during the course of the week, and I'm just trying to find it there. But basically, it was sort of saying that the Victorian government did a survey. And people want internet speeds into their homes of around 50 megabits per second. Now, my question is, what would you do with 50 meg coming into your home? There's a lot of data that would travel in that particular point in time.
Well, you've answered that question earlier in the program, Andrew. Yeah. Your daughters alone have gone through 1 gigabyte of data in a couple of days.
That means they can go through 10 gigabytes of data in the same time. I don't know whether that's an economically viable decision. You know, if you look at offshore data rates, it's everything's unlimited. It's the speed at which you get it is the price you pay. You pay more money, you get faster stuff, but it's still all unlimited. It's all you can eat types of stuff. But this was a Vic government report. I'm just bringing it up now on the screen. Access Economics, I'm assuming, was the organisation behind it. The report finds that 220,000 Victorians want speed of over 50 megabits per second. Victorian government has revealed estimates that the peg, the demand for broadband services above 50 meg, has just gone through the roof. So, I don't know. There's a lot of video on demand that you could do with that, that's for sure.
Yeah, but that's good. If you've got your kids watching TV and they're tuning through 1 gigabyte in a weekend, you might be in the next room or in your office doing something with, that needs a lot of bandwidth, and your wife might be, video streaming from iView, for example, and she's watching a cooking program or something from the ABC, and you're not limited.
You've been doing work from home. You want to upload your latest TVC you've been working on up to your work server.
And I'm trying to send you Tech Talk stuff for next week on your FTP server, and I'm wanting a slice of your bandwidth as well. So it's all good.
Yeah.
The more the merrier. The more bandwidth you've got, and the less you pay for it. Ultimately, bandwidth will become free. It'll never quite hit there. It's like an exponential curve. It'll approach being free, never quite be free, but we'll end up, as you were saying earlier, we'll be getting more and more and more bandwidth and paying less and less and less for it, and that's how it should be.
I guess this is also where the telcos have to embrace VoIP a little bit too, because everything can go over VoIP. It's like having the same, plumbing in the street, and yet you're charging to send, speak a different language up it. It's quite silly in a lot of respects. So
yeah, well, traditionally we've had telephone services, video, television services, all provided by different pieces of infrastructure and different service providers. But in the next, 5 years, 10 years, the idea is, look, you've got one piece of cable coming into your house, whether it's a piece of optic fiber or whatever it is, part of a national broadband network. And everything's delivered on that, as you say, VoIP, television, Skype calling, the stuff that your kids are watching, stuff that you're uploading to your office.
It's going to free up a lot of radio spectrum, isn't it?
Yeah, right. Radio streaming, everything.
Telstra, apparently they have to take part in the 4G radio spectrum auctions, which are coming up shortly, because that's the next generation sort of, you know, mobile phone data that we're going to have. There's this LTE thing, which is 3.5 or 3.5G sort of, what they call long-term evolution, which is in the same technology as that. But the true 4G stuff's going to happen shortly, and this is where they're going to have to start buying spectrum. So, you know, if we get all the TV stations and radio stations off some of our bandwidth, then we've got all the more space for more data.
Yep.
Makes
and
sense.
Things, and things, you know, things like straightforward video on demand. We had a thing on the show a couple of weeks ago, a website of the week, which was basically you can key in any music track you've ever thought of, and it'll play it to you, stream it over the web to you on demand.
Grooveshark.
Yeah. Grooveshark it was. Very good. And by the way,
we haven't shut that down yet. Normally anything we mention on the show gets shut down fairly quickly.
people talked about blocking the ads or using AdBlock Pro on it. Looking at the quality of the service and the quality of the audio, it's well worth paying the few bucks they're asking for a subscription, I reckon, on that site. Absolutely well worth it. Now, imagine in the future with a national broadband network, some cooperation between the movie houses and the TV production companies and the ISPs. Stop all this BitTorrent traffic. You'll subscribe to a video on demand service for a few dollars a month. You know, similar to what you pay now for your Foxtel or whatever. There'll be servers in telephone exchanges all over the country, and if you want to watch, you know, season 4, episode 7 of your favourite show, you just click on it, bang, it's there, and you'll watch it straight away.
You go to your Google TV interface and you say, what was that episode of Lost, Graham, where the plane crashed into something or other, and you search for that, bang, comes up with 5 or 6 or 8 different options, click on that, and you're watching it straight away.
That's right.
That's what we need, and that's what we need
in the future.
That's what we
and
need.
And people will pay for a service like that, and they'll stop all this BitTorrent illegal downloading if you make it work for them like that.
Make it accessible, make it good quality.
All right, well, let's hear what Adam Turner has to say from the View from the Couch this week. He caught up with the Sony gurus up north. You'll have to sit up, pay attention, turn all the stuff off in the background. Apologies from the audio in advance of this, but here's Adam's View from the Couch for this week, talking about the PS3 video on demand and what Sony have got in store for us.
Last week was a huge week for home entertainment buffs in Australia, with new streaming video services announced for both Sony's PlayStation 3 and Microsoft's Xbox 360. The Xbox 360 announcement is probably the most interesting. Pay TV giant Foxtel has cut a deal with Microsoft to offer at least 30 Foxtel channels over the internet to Xbox 360 users. What's really interesting is that the new service won't be restricted to existing Foxtel customers. All you'll need is an Xbox 360, an Xbox Gold subscription, and a Foxtel by Xbox Live subscription. Foxtel was very light on details such as timing, packages, or pricing. The announcement was really designed to steal attention away from the upcoming Fetch TV service, as well as the launch of Sony's movie download service for the PlayStation 3, but I'll come back to that in a minute. Foxtel's new Xbox 360 service could be revolutionary if Foxtel offers flexibility over channel bundles and contracts. That's a big if coming from Foxtel, but you'd think Foxtel could afford to be more flexible on the pricing, considering it doesn't need to go to the expense of hooking up the cable to your house or supplying you with a set-top box. You do all the work and they just send you the content over the internet. Of course, there's also pressure from online upstarts such as Fetch TV, a new online pay TV provider which has already announced deals with iiNet and Internode. It seems Fetch TV is aiming to win over people who source the bulk of their entertainment from the internet, but are prepared to pay for a handful of specific subscription channels rather than the expensive Foxtel packages. The Bring Your Own Xbox 360 business model for Foxtel should give it the flexibility to compete with Fetch TV, although Foxtel obviously wants to keep something up its sleeve so it's not to cut into its existing subscriber base. I wouldn't be surprised if some of the premium movie or sports channels aren't available via the Xbox 360. For example, maybe live AFL games. It's also very unlikely the picture quality in the Xbox 360 over the internet will rival that of the high-definition AFL broadcasts over the cable. The Foxtel Xbox 360 service will offer, quote, a wide range of video-on-demand services, including television series and movies. You'd think that this will cause some tension with Microsoft, considering they already have
an Australian movie rental service for the Xbox 360. Of course, there's already tension between Foxtel and its part owner Telstra, because Telstra has released its own T-Box personal video recorder and video download box for Telstra Big Pond customers. Meanwhile, the free-to-air networks are adding new digital-only channels and ramping up their free online catch-up TV services, which are coming directly to TVs, Blu-ray players and games consoles such as the PlayStation 3. Foxtel's Xbox 360 deal with Microsoft could mean that we won't see any catch-up TV services on the Xbox 360, not even Nine's new FixPlay service, which is part of the Nine MSN deal with Microsoft. I guess we'll just have to wait and see who's prepared to step on whose toes. Now, going back to the PlayStation 3 announcement, the new PlayStation 3 movie service offers standard and high-def movies online to rent or buy, following in the footsteps of the Xbox 360 service launched last year and Apple service launched a few years ago, which works with iTunes or an Apple TV. Now, the PS3 movie store will initially offer more than 600 movies from, quote, all the major studios. It'll be updated weekly and add around 50 new movies every month. PlayStation 3 owners will be able to hire or purchase movies using their existing PlayStation Network account and wallet. Rental prices start from $3.99 and purchases from $6.99, with the ability to start watching movies while they're still downloading. Judging from the content on show at the Sydney launch last week, it seems Sony is following the practice of initially offering new movies only for purchase. New released movies will sell for around $25, although initially you'll only be able to purchase standard def movies, not high def. Once a movie is available to rent, the standard def versions will go for around $5.99 and the high definition versions will go for around $6.99. Viewers have 14 days to start watching rentals, and once they've started watching it, the movie will cease to play after 48 hours. Catch-up TV fans will be disappointed that the 7 Networks Plus 7 service hasn't been added to the PlayStation 3 alongside ABC's iView, although I'm sure this will come in the near future. I caught up with Sony Computer Entertainment Managing Director Michael Ephraim at last week's launch, along with Sony Network Entertainment Marketing Director Alison Turner. Now, please forgive the audio quality. I forgot to chuck my Zoom H2 recorder in my bag, so I had a go at recording this with the iPhone.
I noticed looking at the listings for What's Hot, most of those seem to be only for purchase and not for rent. What sort of policy is there going to be in terms of when something comes first and how long it's available only for purchase before it then's available for rent as well?
You know, it will differ with all the studios.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but usually if they don't come at the same time, they're not very far apart.
Yeah. So far apart would be within weeks?
It would depend on the studio, okay. So it's difficult to actually comment on the windows, but we get all of it. We get to buy and to rent. So.
Does that vary between territories as well?
Everything differs across studios, across territories.
Yeah,
as a
just
rule.
To make things interesting.
Yeah, exactly. It does make it interesting. Mm. But, you know, the nice thing is we're able to manage the stores all on a local level. So what you see on the Australian store may be different to what you see on one of the other stores across Europe. So they're very, they're localised by, you know, we program them locally.
Mm-hmm.
What we decide should go onto the front of the store is done on a local level, so...
And is the content, is the Australian content served up in Australia?
Good question.
We just checked that.
Yeah.
No, but we've got caching happening in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's being served up out of San Diego.
Yeah.
So it's served out of San Diego, but cached here.
Cached here, so you'll get a reasonable performance.
Yeah, the performance, I think, you know, people will be very pleased with.
The way that you're caching it in Australia, does it offer opportunities for unneeded downloads from some ISPs?
You know, this whole ISP thing is a big discussion, as you know, with everyone. We've been having discussions with ISPs about the PlayStation Network in totality, how it's cached, like you say, if it's Akamai servers or, you know, what point, where do they point to. ISPs are really not all that keen to do data agreements. That's our feeling. You know, it costs them money. And at the end of the day, the data cost is coming down and dropping like a brick, as you know, right? There was this new program, a new offer, $49 for completely unlimited no peak or, you know, off-peak type of stuff. So we think, you know, if you look at 3 years ago, where costs have gone in speeds, and you push the clock forward a couple more years, they even say it will become a utility like your electricity.
Yeah.
In the end, if, when, government, which Labour, Liberals in power, you know, that would even progress that even further. So we're sort of letting the competition take care of itself in the ISP space. We're obviously in dialogue with everyone from Telstra to Optus to IINet to Primus to AAPT. You know, everybody sees us as a very good partner because of the device. So ISPs want to work with us because they see PS3 as the ideal broadband device that they can bolt on as far as adding value, because now broadband is moving into the mass market, right? The core, whoever that is, it has broadband.
Yeah.
The next million broadband users are going to be the family.
Yeah.
So we're working with them in those kind of collaborations. We're talking about ISP dollar cost. But I really feel that it's moving in the direction that we need it to.
Did I hear you correctly when you said that you sold 70,000 Play TV boxes in Australia?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, sell through. So that's, you know, we sold more into trade. We sold about 80,000, so it's about 10,000. And we sold through, from November 22nd to the end of 2009, we sold through about 36,000 in that six-week period. We were running out of stock. We were stock constrained. We probably could have moved another 10,000. And in 2009, in a six-week period, we outsold every other PVR on the market.
But we're just in that six-week period, not for the
whole year. No, for the whole year.
That's what I thought you said the first time. That's why I'm double-checking.
The whole year. You know, you look at Top Field and those kind of brands and TiVo, we outsold them and did it in only 6 weeks.
Do you have figures for how many PS3s have been sold in Australia?
Yeah, PS3s, we're now approximately about 850,000.
Okay.
That includes the Bravia deals that we've done with our sister company over the last year and a half. And we're, in fact, there's one running currently where they have about 40,000 PS3s to give away.
So almost 10% of PS3 owners went out and bought a Play TV.
Yep.
You have to be happy with that.
We're very happy, and it's delivered on this, you know, the games is just the start messaging. Play TV has probably done that as much as anything else that we've done.
Yeah.
VidZone has done that. ABC iView, very successful. I think Play TV, because of the timing, HD digital stations, PVR in this country sort of has been happening, as you would know, over the last year. So we sort of hit a sweet spot when we launched in November. Our timing was very well planned on our part, or a bit of luck, I don't know, one of the two. But we waited for the HD version because they launched Play TV in Europe in the SD version, and Australia is further ahead, really, in the HD market, BD market, as we know, than Europe, probably a bit closer to the US. So we waited for that, and that really, really worked a treat.
Yeah, I don't think you would have sold 70,000 of them if they're on the SD.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, see, the Play TV is an interesting one because it's not really a money spinner. It's a way that people are using the console without putting any money in Sony's pocket, unlike the pirating movies or playing games or anything else. What's the thinking behind something like that?
I'm being facetious here, but global domination.
Sony, I'm going to be less.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. Don't write that down. That's a joke. But it's just, it's, you know, first of all, there is a bit of profit in selling the peripheral at $169. Yeah. But if you look at a lot of things that we're doing, some are proven revenue streams, some are future revenue streams.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the key thing with these new innovations is to position and deliver the ultimate entertainment device.
Yeah.
So everything we do doesn't have to make money. We want to get 3 million PS3s in homes. You know, we did 2.5 million of PS1 and PS2. With the future-proof capability, we think the sky's the limit. So by adding Play TV, we appeal to a much broader segment of the market.
Yeah.
So it's not all about revenue.
Games consoles have always been like Trojan horses. They sneak into your lounge room claiming they're just for games, but then it opens up a whole new way to get into people's wallets.
Yeah.
I like that.
But again, the Play TV one is good because it sort of secures its spot in the lounge room. Now, you can't move that. I'm using it to watch TV, so it's sort of, in the world of boxes, it's kind of a way to lock yourself in,
I suppose. And, you know, the feedback from consumers is very, very easy to use. Mm-hmm. Even technophobic, I'm not trying to be, anyway, technophobic housewives, you know, have played it that I know of, and they go, God, I record all my TV shows now. So very easy to use.
What was the thinking behind adding the Freedom logo to it?
We think that, you know, Freeview is spending a lot of money promoting the free-to-air networks. Mm-hmm. We think they're doing a very good job of that. It also allows us to communicate all the channels that were available by using the Freeview logo. And, you know, they're promoting ABC 2 and 3 and SBS 2 and Go and so on. So, you know, we're working with Freeview to just promote free-to-air. Obviously, subscription TV we're not involved in, and sort of as a competitor. So we saw that it would be worthwhile to work with Freeview since they're promoting the whole free-to-air offerings.
But the Freeview actually took away functionality, though, didn't it? It didn't actually add anything.
It took away one functionality, which is the 120 frames fast-forward.
Yeah.
You know, we think, again, it's a collaborative marketing of more channels, more free channels, digital HD channels. And that's the message we want Play TV to be involved in, and that's probably why we did it with Freeview.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Adam makes a very good point there. It's the Trojan horse. This is the PS3, the Trojan horse sneaking into the living room as a games console. And then next thing you know, it's got you by the short and curly so that it's going to be your video server, it's going to be your entertainment center, it's going to stream everything across the, you name it, it'll do it.
One of the people in our chat before, I think it might have been Jono, I'm not sure, they were saying, why do I need a PS3 in my lounge room? I don't want a games console in my lounge room. Well, it's more than just the games console, isn't it?
Yeah, the games is really becoming incidental to what this device can do now. But there are other streaming devices out there as well. If you're going to rock up to pick up your new iPad fairly shortly, there's a great device out there. I've just put mine away, actually. It's called Air Video. And if you've got a PC or a Mac, you can actually run the Air Video server on it. And then you put the Air Video client on anything you like, you know, either an iPhone or an iPad or whatever you like. And it streams and converts movies of whatever format to the format that plays on these new devices really over the Ethernet as it goes. That happens real time. So you can stream from your living room these days. You don't have to actually pull it in from far away. Although this is where the PS3 is going to come into it. You can download your movies and watch them at home. Don't have to go to the video library anymore. Mm. Isn't that good?
It's good. It is good.
Video easy.
We have to get this mainstream. We have to get the average Joe Bloggs in his living room to start thinking this way. And get this
it
stuff
is a new mindset,
the,
isn't it?
Yeah,
it
but getting an appliance, a popular appliance like the PlayStation 3 into homes is step one. That's step one of getting Joe Bloggs onto it.
But to get that's people exactly out of the mindset of thinking that that's a games console and to start thinking of it as a fundamental component of what is in your living room.
Once again, if you're hearing what Adam was just there on that last interview, they're talking about PlayStations in the millions out there. So they're going to – it'll be like Apple's iPhone. It'll become ubiquitous after a while. Everyone will have them.
Yep.
And the PS3 is probably going to go down that way as well. Mm. Wondering if that's a method to the madness for the current pricing. Although here in Australia, the PS3 is the most dearest – or should I say, is the dearest game console out there.
Is that right?
Yeah, compared to the Wii's and all that. Like I think you mentioned
last
week,
the Wii's. Are we getting messed up like with the Microsoft Australia pricing?
And the Adobe pricing, or Adobe pricing, whichever.
Extracting the waste liquid a bit on their pricing?
There's a middleman somewhere along the line. Taking their cut.
Who's that, Microsoft, you're saying?
Well, Sony with their PlayStation pricing. Well, we know Microsoft are taking the piss with their with their Australian pricing.
Brad in our chat room says he has an Xbox 360, which is the Microsoft games console. They're sort of the big three, aren't they, that seem to be the most popular. There's the Microsoft Xbox 360, the Sony's PlayStation 3, and the Nintendo Wii, which Andrew mentioned earlier.
Yeah, is the Xbox really that popular?
I think it is, yeah. It's got a very large following.
There's a lot of Wiis out there.
But don't forget too, speaking of video games, what's the new generation Microsoft one coming out? I'm just trying to think of Project something, and I can't think of its name off the top of my head. That's going to hit very shortly. It's the virtual one, and it's on the tip of my tongue, and I can't think of its name. Someone in the chat room can help me here, I'm sure. Natal, Project Natal.
Yes.
Or Natal is coming out very shortly. So that's going to revolutionise what Microsoft are doing in the gaming arena. So roll on the technology.
That Project Natal, we haven't talked about that before, but have we?
Yeah.
Okay, shut up. I don't know. Where was I?
Yeah, when they first touted it, they did some demos, which we talked about on the show, which basically showed...
It's controllerless.
It is controller. Video games without the controller.
Do this, Graham. Hold your hands up in front of you like you're driving this car, like a steering wheel, and there's no controller there. Now, do that to turn to the left. And do that to turn to the right.
It's good for radio, guys. Yeah,
you make gestures.
That was excellent for radio there. Yes.
Really good. Pedestrians step out in front of your car.
That was television. We'd be off air now.
There's no webcam here. No.
But that's what you do with this this Project Natal that Andrew's mentioned. Yeah, it's completely... There is no controller. Well, there is a controller, but you don't actually have one that you're holding. Make gestures with your body.
A virtual controller. Yeah. A gesture.
Gesture-based
really
gaming.
If you have a look at some of the stuff that is on the net, I think, about at the moment, you'll see, I think, kickbox games and things like that, where you physically have to get up and lift a leg.
Right.
So to speak.
Well, no, you do.
Yeah, I know you do, speaking. Yes.
Isn't there a danger that they'll kickbox their little sister across the room?
Absolutely. Someone will turn around and do a karate chop and decapitate some person standing accidentally behind them or something. Yes.
I guess this is a step better than doing the hand gestures with the controller strapped to your
hand. And having the Wii flying through the television.
Flies off, yeah.
Yeah, you're actually in real danger of kickboxing someone in the head. Yes. You go, I was playing a game, officer.
Yes. So while your little friend is lying dead on the
floor.
Meanwhile,
your little friend in an induced coma in hospital.
What did you
do
to your sister?
Yes.
Sorry, I was just playing a game on the Xbox. Natal. Microsoft, what are you doing to us? Okay, let's get back to the rundown.
Back to reality.
Maybe. Tech Talk Radio. Andrew, Dr. Ron and Graham in this evening. Yes. Come and join us on the chat room, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. There's everyone's there tonight. Oh, there's a few new... Smoke Salmon's back.
Smoke Salmon.
Where do people get these avatars from? Or is that an avatar or maybe it's just an alias, isn't it? Yeah.
Nick.
So, Chrome is going to launch a web store, or should I say the Google Chrome web store. This week at the developers conference, Google announced the new Chrome web store, which will deliver browser installable applications. And obviously, we're going to get stuff that will come into Chrome. Everyone's got a store these days.
Yep.
And I think it's really...
And we kind of didn't make much of a fuss about it on Tech Talk when it happened, but Chrome suddenly went all pluginable.
Well, I like Chrome now because a lot of the plugins that I used to use on Firefox now work.
You can now use on Chrome. Well, so I'm not a big plug-in fan. I'm a bit of a plain vanilla sort of a guy.
Oh, yeah?
So to speak.
So you got a vanilla birthday cake today.
Apparently.
That was lovely, Lainey.
Happy birthday, Graham.
Oh, thank you very much. We had to mention that on air, didn't we?
Oh, well, Graham.
It's too late now.
You mentioned vanilla.
Andrew brought up
vanilla
the cake
icing
as well.
It's just links.
We won't say how many candles there are on the cake.
And a Chrome. There were none, actually. There were snakes. That's a good idea. What were we talking about? To Google,
we were talking about Chrome browser becoming pluginable, and you can put Adblock Pro and your favorite linking thing, and all these add-ons that you used to have in Firefox before Firefox became slow as a wet week, that you can now use in Chrome. And presumably now you're in risk of putting too many plugins in Chrome and it's slowing down. So I guess that's something we've got to watch out for.
Well, yes, but you don't have to download them if you don't want them. Just get the ones you want.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Choose very carefully what plugins you plug in.
Yeah. So anyway, Google Chrome Web Store is now coming to the forefront. Now, this is quite funny. It's almost verging on odd spot material, but I left that for Dr. Ron, but I thought I'd talk about this in the meanwhile. IBM unleashed a virus on OzServe.
Oh, no, yes.
Just the other day. You know when you go to those conferences and you get given out all the memory? Yeah, no one gives out documents anymore. They scan you and they give you memory sticks. Well, someone left a virus on the memory stick at a security conference.
Oh, not one, but two.
Two, was it? I thought there was one.
And was it on every memory stick that was handed out at the conference?
Absolutely. How's that for whoops?
How embarrassment.
Yeah, it was. Delegates to OzCert, Australia's premier information security event, held last week on the Gold Coast have taken home a little more than they actually bargained for. In an email this afternoon, IBM advised visitors to its IBM of all people to its OzCert booth that its complimentary USB key was infected with a virus.
Yep.
Yeah, that'll do it every time.
Imagine going to a security conference
to talk about
promoting these about how secure your products are, and then doing something like
maybe
that.
Maybe one got out. Maybe one got out. Who collects viruses?
You Graham used to. Does.
I used to. I don't so much anymore.
Where did you keep them? On a memory stick?
Well, back in those days, on floppy disks. On that's how long ago I was doing that. So
because you could dissect them and learn about them, really, couldn't
well,
you?
Well, that was learn the idea.
Replicatable
yeah,
I would habits.
What I wanted to do was to be able to infect a machine and test that I could disinfect it. Back in the old days, I wanted to be able to test my antivirus software and my disinfecting skills.
Do we look back at the old days of viruses and go, oh, that was pretty straightforward. Just all we needed to do back then was invent something like penicillin and fix it.
Yeah.
Nowadays, things are a tad more complex.
Yep. Well, and yet again, everything old is new again. Back in those days, all the viruses spread by floppy disks, by things on floppy disks being infected. You run that on the new computer and it infects the new computer. What happened then is that nobody used floppy disks. Pardon me, nobody used floppy disks anymore. All the viruses spread by email. Now we're getting a whole rash of these viruses, if you'll pardon the pun, being distributed again by, not in floppy disk this time, but on USB memory sticks using the auto-run feature on USB. You know how when you plug some USB memory sticks in that have got software installed on them, they pop up and automatically run?
They nearly all do these days out of when you buy them.
When you buy them out of the box, which is really annoying.
It is.
Yeah, stop doing that, memory stick manufacturers. It just bugs us.
But it's like buying those removable drives too. You know, you buy a Western Digital and you get...
Yeah, exactly.
I bought one of the show specials the other day. I came back from the States. I've actually, you plug it in and two drives mount. One is like a CD thing and you can run all their software, and the other's like somewhere to store your stuff. It's like,
yeah, you can go away.
Just format it and give me a drive.
I wanted a drive. I bought this so I had space. That's all I wanted. But anyway, what's interesting is that, USB sticks now using the auto run feature are spreading viruses again in the old fashioned way. The response seems to be that Windows 7 and possibly some other versions of Windows, Microsoft are now turning off the auto-run feature by default. And if that's not happening, then you can do it. You can also do that manually. So turn off auto-run so that if you plug something in or put a disk in, you have to go there and find setup.exe if you want to install something. Don't have it auto-run for you.
Correct. I was just looking at the humour in the chat room at the moment.
If you don't know how to do that, go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au and ask the question and we'll help you do it.
The source of every good... Yes.
Yes.
Just looking at the humour in the chat room at the moment, the boys are talking about Froyo, which is what we were talking about last week, which is the next version Yeah, I know.
See, there's a problem with we're going to run a dobe on our Froyo.
Yeah, that's right. Warlock's then gone on and said Gingerbread's 2.3 and Magic Pudding's 2.4.
That's right.
See, that's the type of humour that we have in our chat room. Come along and participate over there. So,
chip buddies.
Yes. Now, Pakistan shut down YouTube and Facebook during the course of the week too, which, I don't know, that's a sign of nervousness, I guess, from a government's point of view. But anyway, Pakistan has blocked the popular video file sharing site YouTube indefinitely in a bid to contain blasphemous material.
Mm-hmm.
So the blockade came hours after the Pakistan Telecommunications Authority, a derivative of Telstra, directed internet service providers to stop accessing the social networking site Facebook indefinitely, also because it was having a go at the Prophet Muhammad. So for religious reasons, we're seeing a lot of social networking sites come under pressure from countries around the world. Is this a sign of things to come? Obviously, Facebook is going to have a revolution very shortly. What was that day?
I can't remember. Day.
We'll have to put
that up. 31st of May, I think it was.
Yeah. Oh, that's got to be good, I would have thought.
That's terrible. There's so many vindictive people out there that are just...
Facebook is bad. Come on.
It's not bad at all.
It's not good.
What's it not good for?
I wouldn't let my kids up there. No, go and find something else. Go and tweet or do something like that.
What, Twitter's better than Facebook, isn't
it? Yeah, at least you can't put photos and stuff like that up there unless you're a twit picker, and then even still. Anyway, why? Yeah. I know you're a Facebook guru.
Facebook has very few redeeming features, really.
Oh, well.
It's not that it's completely and absolute evil. It's just that it has very few redeeming features. It's just it's not particularly good either.
I think it's a good way to keep in touch with people, and if you know its limitations and you know how you can be exploited, then you won't be.
Could be a good research.
It's up to us to educate people.
I think I know why.
I'm trying to educate people to close their Facebook accounts.
I know
accounts.
You are.
Listen, I think we need Facebook accounts because that's how law enforcement agencies and people like that can do research on people. Surely, because that's what
and
they
news,
do.
And news agencies and...
Yeah. All those people. They've got a source of photographs for media people.
Private agents.
Source. Yeah, exactly. See, people who want to use Facebook, just go right ahead and use it. You know, Darwin theory of evolution comes to mind. But Google takes the apps cloud to enterprise...
Darwin's theory. Oh dear, Mark
Darwinian
Diggins,
social networking. We get
Mark Diggins in our chat room says Andrew just doesn't get FB. That's Facebook, Andrew. So you know what that means.
It's bad. Thank you, Mark Diggins.
Yes, Mark's on Facebook. He's an active Facebooker. I regularly chat to Mark there and exchange photos and comments, and I poke him and he pokes me, and the world's a better place.
Yeah, and
for
the FBI, is the FBI following you? Oh, hang on, that's Twitter.
That's FBI, not FB.
FB.
You're getting confused.
But isn't it's like it's Twitter. Remember when ASIO was following Adam Turner?
Yeah, that was that was funny, if nothing else.
It
was funny seeing Adam trying to ascertain the credentials of that account. But then I think they stopped following him. They found better things to do.
Did they? Hey, what have happened to a lot of the fake people on Twitter? Have they still, like, disappeared, or are they still out there? Like the fake Stephen Conroy
and
stuff
like that. There's lots of
fake ones very out there. Entertaining, but I must admit I've...
Ardy,
off the edge a bit
in our chat room, wants Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy to administer Facebook pages.
Administer them? Define administer.
That could be...
legislate?
That could be the F. That could be the F in the ABCDEF. The Minister for Broadband Communications, Digital Economy and Facebook, Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy. There you go.
Just reeks credibility there, doesn't it?
I'll roll that in the news when I tap up some
see
news
who
notes
notices.
For you. See if anyone notices.
Yeah, good thinking there. Google's going to take apps to the cloud for enterprise. Google has unveiled a business-grade version of its Google Apps service, which I thought had been around for a while, but obviously they've revamped it a little bit.
Well, Google Apps have been around for a long while.
I use it. I think it's terrific.
They're trying to push... Yeah, it is. It's a really great service. Yeah.
There's a free version and there's a paid version, and obviously the paid version, obviously now you get a bit more bang for your buck. Anyway, they're offering new pricing, service level agreements and organisations for organisations that want applications hosted in the cloud and delivered to them via the company intranet. I think there's another line you've got to get over there too, is how safe or how do you feel about having all your company information stored on a third party's computer as opposed to your own party in the office.
Oh, they already know how to get into your Wi-Fi network and all that anyway. So.
Google, that's right. Yeah. They just drive past in a little van.
Seriously, this is a great service. And you know who this is perfect for? You know, netbooks aren't better at anything. Netbooks are great for accessing the internet. That's
what
all
was that, Steve?
Or for accessing web pages. And if you're a netbook user, you'd be insane to try and install Office or even OpenOffice.org or anything like that.
Correct.
On your netbook running an Atom processor.
It's just not going to work, is it?
It's just not. It's not going to be efficient. It's going to run slowly. It's not going to work well for you.
I run Word on mine.
But what these things
look
do,
for that matter, seems to be all right.
What these things do really well is access web pages. So instead of using your netbook to have documents on it and try and use it like a full-blown notebook, you know, use it to access Google Docs. Do all your work on there. You can do your word processing, your spreadsheet. You can do your PowerPoint presentations, or the whole lot. You can do just as well as most people use. You know, the basic features of those programs in Office, and you've got nothing on your netbook. And if your netbook gets lost, or you know, dropped in the river, or run over by a tram, or whatever, you've lost nothing. Or you just go down, shell out another $500. You've got another netbook, and all your stuff's still online there.
Graham, you're in the coalface. You're out in the field.
Yeah.
Your customers are out there. What do you reckon the adoption of this type of technology would be to those sort of organisations? Are they nervous about going there, or do you think they're prepared to embrace it now?
At a company level, I think there's a lot of nervousness and not, you know, a lot of convincing to do.
Is that from lack of understanding?
Yeah. And particularly with the companies I work for that are small companies and so on. But from an individual level, there's a lot of individuals out there that are starting to experiment with it. And, you know, this is where the culture will start to change. You know, if the managing director and the, you know, the you know, the high ups in the company start becoming fans of Google Docs because it allows them to be much more effective road warriors than they were, then they might start looking at moving as a company to that.
One of the other benefits of it too is that you get Gmail accounts for all your users at your domain. So it's not a Gmail account, but it is a Gmail account.
Well, it is a Gmail account, but a Gmail account linked to your domain.
Yeah,
so,
which works very, this is
something
well.
That, again, could be used in a business. A lot of people are using it personally, or very, very small businesses are using it, like one-man, sole trader type businesses and things like that, where you get a domain name, techtalkradio.com.au, you link it to your Gmail accounts, and, you can send and receive just like if you had your own internal mail server, but without having to shell out money for exchange and a mail server or small business server or whatever it might happen to be.
It's a valid point. I must admit, I've been trialing it is probably the right word.
Yeah.
For the office environment with one of, like, we have a domain, .com.au, and I've registered the .net.au and pointed it at the Google Cloud to try it out. And we've been slowly embracing it, and as time goes by, we're sort of slowly moving into the .net.au type sort of thing. So let's put it up there as well. So, in the office we'll be talking about, you'll find that document on the .net thing in the cloud. And it's sort of the way that we're starting to move across and embrace it. But the Gmail side of things is really quite good. And from a Google point of view, as you want to start paying for it, I think it's $50 per user per year, US.
Yeah, which is really...
They might have changed that since this new...
For a small to medium-sized business, that's not a huge amount.
Oh, when you think about it, if you've got 10 people on the ground, it's less than the server, less than software, it's less than a lot of things. It's $500 a year, US.
Yep. And for what it is, even for the free version, the Gmail system is very, very feature-rich. There's a lot of the professional features that you'd expect in your own hosted, full-blown mail server in your office. A lot of those features are built into the Gmail system, much more so than you get in your average, free online email service.
It used to be that people were concerned about uptime and availability of access to the
and
internet.
That is a big, big thing. And, you might find that, your internet service at your office goes down. But on the other hand, you can look at the flip side of this. Your internet service in your office goes down, so you pull out your netbook, you put your mobile, your broadband in it, and you can access the same document through another method.
But that used to be a concern, but these days it's less and less of a worry. Like, if you've got a computer, you're usually connected to the internet, aren't you?
That's right, yeah.
If you need to be, if you're set up to always be connected, then usually you are. You don't have a problem connecting. You're always within coverage of either a Wi-Fi hotspot or a broadband network if you've got a device which connects to a broadband
network.
And
generally these things are a lot more robust than they used to be.
Mm.
They're still not foolproof, though. I mean, you can have problems like... A situation, a company I was involved with recently, someone accidentally cancelled the phone line that the ADSL service was delivered on.
Oh, whoops.
That'll do it.
And that caused...
That's when you pop down to the Telstra shop and buy your next G card.
Yeah, we did that. We dropped a mobile broadband router in there to try and keep them going on a limited service for a little while. But it takes time because you've got to get the phone line reconnected and then you've got to get the ADSL service.
That's a serious cancellation.
Yeah, and then you've got to get the ADSL service reestablished on the line. So it can take, that's not sorted out in a couple of hours sort of situation. That's sorted out in a few days situation. So,
How did they realise that their service had been cut off? They come in the next morning and there was nothing there, or...?
Yeah, they checked their email at 10 o'clock and they had new emails, and at 11 o'clock they checked their email and they didn't have any new emails and thought, what's going on here?
Mm.
Was there an accountant... Sorry to pick on accountants, but everyone who's not an accountant picks on accountants. Did someone look at a phone bill and go, I don't know what that is, we're just not going to pay that?
Well, it wasn't directly an accountant, but yes.
Just briefly before we go to the odd spot gadget and website of the week, says he looking at the clock.
Did they get strung up?
No, because they were a bit high up in the company to string.
Andrew, continue.
Victor Kiam. I like the company so much I bought it. Hey, Thodey, you remember him? He's the quiet achiever from the Telstra ranks.
Oh, yes.
Apparently they've sold 10,000 T-Hubs. Do you know anyone who's got one?
What's a T-Hub?
A T-Hub is this...
Haven't you seen the ad on the telly with Einstein in the glass cubicle?
It's the most... It's the dumbest, stupidest advertising campaign that Telstra have come out with for a long time.
Written, spoken, and authorised by Dr.
Telstra
Ron.
Have got some really good advertising campaigns. The really funny one at the moment is on TV is the Next G one, where the guy and the girl, and they're in the lift, and the guy's trying to get on eBay, and his girlfriend outbids him because she doesn't want him to buy
the
thing.
You're the one who watches commercial television.
Yeah, and the other one is where they're in the restaurant, and she's trying to think of the... Oh, he's trying to think of the name of the girlfriend they're meeting, and it's Melanie, and he says, it sounds like a fruit or something, and she's got the Next G connection, and he hasn't. It's very funny commercials. Those ones for the T-Hub, they're stupid, they're dumb, they're pointless, they're mindless. It's got some guy who's this old man who's supposed to be Alexander Graham Bell with a Scottish accent, and he's talking about...
Billy Connolly.
Yeah, no. He's talking about the lolcats or something. It's just pointless. Completely misses the whole... apart from it not being entertaining, completely misses the point of selling a T-Hub for what it is. I don't know what it is, because they haven't told me anything about it. All I know is it's some routery thing that you connect there to your phone line, and it's got a touch screen, you can directly access...
It's impressed Alexander Graham Bell.
Yeah, whose disembodied head is floating in a vacuum in a...
So it's a mobile broadband router like you get in the old days, but it's got a terminal, you know, PC or something built into it.
Yeah, it's designed as an ADSL router. For home.
Yep. Oh, okay, ADSL router, yeah.
For home, and it's got a touch screen built into it. It's the size of a netbook, and you can press icons on the screen.
Yeah, we should, when we're up.
So you can do your white pages lookups.
Do your white pages, do your Twitters, do your Facebooks, do your, look at your, you know, MasterChef streaming down into the kitchen, whatever you want to do.
Wonder if there's a tea shop at Doncaster when we go up there for the Apple opening thing. We could pop in there and see if they know what it does.
We should rev them up, because it looks like a good product, but it's just there's nothing in the advertising campaign that explains anything to you. No, the Bob campaign's stupid as well, but at least that tells you what it is. It tells you that it's a broadband a broadband hub.
Yeah, everybody knows the actual commercial, but they don't know what it's about.
Yeah.
Well, who is Bob?
Well, I don't know this Telstra commercial, but then I watch all my TV programs.
See, that's supposed to be
at free.
Yeah. Isn't that supposed to be broadband in a box? B-I-O-B? Broadband in a... B-I-A-B. Broadband in a box. Why do they call it Bob?
Because Bob...
Can someone in the chat answer that? There's got to be someone who works for iNet listening to us right now. Why do they call it Bob when it's broadband in a box, which is B-I-A-B?
Because BIAB doesn't have the same...
It doesn't, does it?
No, BIAB.
Now, yeah. Just before I pull your faders down, because you won't stop talking tonight.
And another thing...
Are you having trouble with the timing of the show, Andrew?
I am, but
are
that's
we messing you up with all our talking?
No, it's just you know...
Stop talking, Graham. Andrew's trying to talk.
I just want to add one more thing. With the falling Australian dollar at the moment, do you reckon Apple are going to drop the price for the iPad here next week? Because
drop it,
yeah. Because the Aussie dollar, when the iPad was announced, it was at 93 cents. Now we're down to 81 cents, which is about...
Well, that would tend to make the price go up, wouldn't it?
If no.
Yeah, they'll push it up if they've got the chance.
Yeah, the Australian dollar going down relative to the US dollar will put the price...
Oh yeah, you're right. Actually,
up.
Won't it? So, would you reckon it'll push it up then? Will it become dearer?
It might. They might take it on board to push the price up. The Wi-Fi only models. I'm going to RRP from $629 for a 16-gig model through to $879 for a 64-gig model. And if you want a 3G and Wi-Fi model, you're going to be starting at $799.
Get in early. It might go up.
16-gig, yeah, get in early. All the way through to $1,049 for the 64-gig model. That's for 3G and Wi-Fi.
All right, we'll be handing the show over to you, Dr. Ron, after this.
Suffering suck it out. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra have dropped the price of their prepaid broadband data too.
Buckle yourself in, hold on to your hemorrhoids.
Clayton Skype, the Skype you have when you're not having a Skype.
It's a real problem. It's a real problem.
Install Fring. Fring's great. Fring.
Now, if that's not a red rag to a bull in a china shop.
If it's in the cradle and it's all plugged in, that's fine.
Because I can stick things in its bottom.
Yeah, but
it's in the cradle.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Did you say gridiron cross-country wrestling or something?
Yeah, well, I don't know what that would... Yeah.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
I bought one of these during the week. Garmin's Nuvi 1490T, 1490T. Garmin GPS receiver, navigator. It's fitted with a 5-inch touch screen. It's Garmin's latest GPS offering. The screen mounts a simple suction cup and clip system. and you can connect the little mini USB-based power adapter behind the units. You can enter an address, select a point of interest, or enter raw coordinates. It's got text-to-speech for pronunciation of street names.
Don't you drive with Mrs. Dr. Ron anymore?
No, well, I do now. When she's not there, I can have her,
her
dulcet,
voice.
Dulcet tones through the speaker. It has RDS for traffic alerts and congestion information. It's got Bluetooth, which is great. It's got a general search feature for fuel stops, ATMs, restaurants, shopping areas. It's got the obligatory traffic camera warning. And how's this for cool? I didn't realise it did this until I started driving and playing around with it. It's got lane assist, so it tells you what lane to get in at complex intersections. And it shows you an actual photograph, a JPEG, which slides across the screen. Of
lane
an
assist?
After the lane, I've moved
does
on,
it
Andrew.
Have, does it have lane assist?
Questions will be asked. It has a feature where it slides an actual photograph of an intersection or an off-ramp across the screen. Man. So when you're approaching a complex intersection, you get an actual photograph of that intersection coming up.
And you'll get pinged for watching TV whilst you're navigating.
It's very impressive. I was very impressed the first time I saw that. Look, it retails for around
Did you buy one, did you
yeah,
say?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Does it work?
It works very well. Retails for about $330, and that's our gadget, Garmin's Nuvi 1490T.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This website's been contributed from by Brad in our chat room tonight. The website is digsby.com, D-I-G-S-B-Y.com. This is a social network aggregation service, and it combines all of your social network, email, and messenger logins into one easy-to-use desktop interface. So if you use Facebook, no one here except me, Twitter, Yahoo Messenger, Gmail, Google Talk, MSN Messenger, YouTube, or any other social network, Digsby can combine all of these into one manageable interface. It can also combine incoming social network and email alerts into a live news feed to show you what your friends are up to. There's some good demos and good screenshots on the website, so have a look, www.digsby.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A North Carolina waitress is now jobless after griping on Facebook about the $5 tip she got from a couple who sat at their table for 3 hours. Bricks Pizza fired the 22-year-old Ashley Johnson because she violated company policy, banning staff from speaking disparagingly about customers and casting the restaurant in a bad light on a social network. Ms. Johnson allegedly called the couple cheap and named the restaurant on her Facebook page. Ms. Johnson
we
says,
do that all the time as food critics, don't we?
Yeah, well, she says she's apologised to Bricks and now she's looking for a new job.
Funny about
maybe
that.
Maybe as a social networking consultant. Speaking of such things, social networking and whatnot, Apple's iPad going to be available in Australian stores from this Friday, which will be the 28th of May. We're going up to Doncaster, Andrew?
Yeah, we're
going to
have a couple of lattes up there and stand in the queue and do some grabs.
We're going to take Adam's iPad, we're going to take your iPad, we're going to poke fun and blow raspberries at the people in the queue.
If you know, yes.
And perhaps even talk to some of the people in the queue and find out why they want one of these strange devices.
Find out what they're doing with their lives.
What are they going to do with it?
Come up and say hello if you see us anyway.
And then you'll hear yourself on the radio.
Maybe.
Well, that's a thought, isn't it?
Maybe.
Only if you're good, though.
I don't know if we can do a better job of the audio than we did with Adam tonight. No, we will. We will.
All right. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. We'll be back with post-iPad launch at the same time next week on the station that you're currently listening to. So until then, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Expert opinion from Adam Turner and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.